22. Cale was sitting with his back against the wall of the safely disabled per turns instructions font, trying to find a position that did not make his broken arm hurt, and looking at the podium off in the distance, where Archfoy and Savert and a bunch of nobles wearing paladin bands stood watching as Locke was brought before them. Demon Jell had her hand clamped down on Locke's shoulder, and the paladins had Mr. Dragon lashed to the ground by whips made from the crackling red energy they shot from their bands. It was a farce, since they had been controlling Mr. Dragon the entire time, probably because of the chains around his throat, but as a connoisseur of cons, Cale had to admit that it was a pretty good one. He had just concluded that he should probably get up and help Locke, inasmuch as someone with no magical abilities and a broken arm could help, when the font made a strange clanking sound behind him. Cale turned and slid himself to his feet, wondering if Tarn's plan was underway, but realized instead that something was clanking its way up from the gate below, through the fire. It fountained up into the air a moment later, a great block of some kind of crystal, a little larger than Cale himself, and crashed down to the ground not far away, steaming in the grassy turf. Not crystal, Cale realized. Ice. The great ball of ice groaned, cracked, and then split apart. As the two halves fell to either side, a shirtless man walked toward Cale.
"I see mother-loving fist," Cale said. "You said it was short for indomitable courteous."
Icy rolled out his shoulders and shook a bit of frost from his hands.
"It is also short for indomitable courteous."
"And you said, you specifically said that you possess no elemental magical ability."
"I said that I did not engage in physical combat," Icy said. "And while that was true, I did not in fact..."
He trailed off as Cale shook his head slowly and disappointedly, then rallied.
"Tarn says that disabling the font mechanism entirely was a mistake. The prismatic setting must be tuned to 1/3 diffusion."
"Oh, for..."
Cale looked back at the font and let out a long groan.
"There are 3 puppeteers down there wearing bands. I've got 1 functional arm, and I sort of blew up a crystal that was necessary to make the diffusion matrix work."
"If I disabled the puppeteers, could you fix the diffusion matrix?"
Cale blinked.
"Sure." "Excellent."
Icy angled his head to one side and cracked his neck.
"Let us proceed."
They brought Locke before the podium where the important people stood. The remaining people in the stands, shaken by Mr. Dragon's attack, had gone quiet, except for the screams of the dying, or those who loved them. The exit was still packed with people trying to leave, and the seats that had burned had guards lined up around them, throwing buckets of water onto the smouldering ruins. The ridiculous shobes the competitors had worn had been lashed to poles and throwing javelins as makeshift litters to carry the injured to healers down on the field. Up on the glamour screen, the Manticore and the Griffin were urging everyone to be calm. Archvoyant Savert was there, and Princess Veiled Lightning and a host of nobles, and all of them wore paladin bands and stared down at Locke with smug contempt. Naria was there as well, cool and impassive in her pretty dress and her expensive crystal lenses. Mr. Skinner, the paladin controlling Mr. Dragon, had followed Locke and Jell, and he stood a little off to the side, looking around with evident interest. Lesaguris was there as well, and although Savert was the one standing at the highest point of the podium, it was Lesaguris around whom everyone else orbited.
"Esifacera de Lockenville," said Archvoyant Savert, shaking his head sadly.
Looking past him, Locke saw his face, magnified to a huge size on the glamour screens, and while his voice didn't seem any louder right there at the podium, it was clear that the people still milling around in the stands heard what he said.
"You were my goddaughter, born into privilege as a child of nobles and given a chance to make something worthwhile of your life with opportunities few have available to them. Instead, in bitterness and hatred, you have attacked the very people who treated you with such kindness. You have dishonored everything that the Republic believes in, and you have made life harder for the Orajar, who will unfairly be discriminated against for the crimes you committed."
He sighed.
"Your mother and father would be heartbroken."
"You are not Archvoyant Savert," Locke shouted. "You are a parasitic creature living in the band on his arm. All of them are. The paladin bands are controlling..."
A rocky hand clamped down on her throat, and the other hand, still on her shoulder, drove her to her knees.
"Now?" Jell asked.
"That won't be necessary, dear," Lesagoras said.
An Archvoyant Savert stepped back a tiny bit.
"Mr. Slant had the puppeteers under orders to cut away as soon as she started shouting."
He smiled.
"This is a private conversation, and I'd appreciate it if Captain Locke had the chance to speak."
Jill's hand came off Locke's throat. Locke coughed, spat again, and glared at Lesagoras.
"This isn't over."
Lesagoras gave his thoughtful, polite nod.
"You're right, Locke. It isn't. And honestly, it really won't be that bad."
He smiled sadly.
"The problem is that you had to deal with the Glimmering Folk. They are monsters. They would have destroyed this world had young Ribandaris not finished what we started. It's no wonder that you see us as no different."
"My mistake," Locke said, still on her knees. "You're so much kinder."
"This is a good world, Locke," Lesagoras said. "These are good, simple people. Arca Yurichi wanted to destroy it, and he was wrong. It was lucky for him, and for you as well, that you had an ancient in your midst who could see a gentler course."
He looked over and nodded, and a golem stepped up onto the podium. In its hands, it held Gilspower.
"Cum cognatio seferis,"
Gilspower said. Locke shook her head.
"Screw you, Gil."
"He saved you,"
Lesagoras went on, still polite.
"And thanks to him, we have this republic. We have no intention of destroying it, Locke. There will be no rivers of blood, no cities on fire."
He smiled.
"We're just going to change who's in charge."
Up on Heaven's Spire, in the temple of Pesser the Smith, Mr. Lively smashed Desidora into a wall, hard enough that the iron plating buckled, sending rivets spitting out in all directions. The Death Priest and the Death Priestess were studies in black and white, and the temple around them had given in fully to the aura of death that surrounded them. Grim gargoyles and skull-faced helmets leered at the battle from the walls, and every weapon dripped with spikes and barbs.
"This is pointless,"
Lively said, as Desidora pushed herself back to her feet.
"We are evenly matched in magic, and I far outstrip you in physical power. You cannot win."
"So it seems."
Desidora's body ached, but her power shielded her from the worst of it.
"Then why are you smiling?"
Lively demanded, even as he came in swinging. Desidora ducked under a blow, but the backhand he followed with flung her to the floor.
"Three reasons," she said, and pushed herself back up as Lively grabbed hold of her hair.
She lashed out blindly, caught him across the jaw, and sent him staggering back. Shaking her hair free from his grip, Desidora gave him an icy look.
"You said the gods gave you this power.
But with that power you built the gate to the Shadowlands.
And how did that work out for you?"
She laughed.
"Because of your gift, the Glimmering Folk drove you from this world. If the gods favor one of us today, it is not you."
Lively roared and lunged at her, and she dove to one side and tore a scythe from the wall. As he turned, she swung. She was not fast enough. His hand caught the curved haft of the now silver and barbed everywhere weapon, leaving its long blade inches from his face.
"If I were not chosen by the gods, I would not still have my power," he said.
"Haven't thought that through, have you?" Desidora said. "I gained my power to defeat the Glimmering Folk. They are gone, so why am I still here?"
"A master smith never discards valuable materials,"
Lively said, and twisted the scythe from her hands. It fell to the floor, and Lively struck Desidora with a blow that smashed her into the wall again.
"When you are weak and dying, I will draw your power into my own. I will hold the power of two Death Priests, and with that power, I will wreak wonders this world has never seen. What is your second reason?"
Desidora's head spun from the impact of the blow. Even her aura could only do so much to protect her. She pushed herself to her knees.
"My friends on the ground have disabled whatever your people were going to do. It does not matter if you kill me. You've already lost."
Lively laughed.
"Your friends may not have won the victories they think, Love Priestess. But by all means, keep smiling."
He came forward, hands tightening into fists.
"It will make your death even sweeter."
Desidora sucked in a lungful of breath and waited and prayed for the third reason.
"Who are you? What are you? You are like us, but not. You are not them.
They come and walk in the empty place, and we watch from here. They are different. We make ourselves into shapes like theirs. We do what they do. We become what nears us. You walk the empty places. How do you not flicker and fade outside? How do you stay you? Do you stay you? Are you not you? We can help.
Locke, kneeling and bloody but still defiant, stared at Lysagoras. You can tell yourselves that you're just kind-hearted people, but the only reason we're having this conversation is because you enslaved some poor idiot, and now you're working his body like a puppet.
Lysagoras rolled his eyes.
Like your republic is so much better, Locke. Your voyants were happy enough looking down on the world from the city we left for them. Your nobles and your guilds get every bit of sweat and blood they can from the peasants, for as little as they can in return. You, Orijar, might have shaken off your chains, but most of you are still little more than slaves, by any standard that matters.
He smiled.
You can't disagree with me that strongly. How much time have you spent breaking the laws of the society that you're trying to save?
If this is your argument that you're not terrible people, Locke said, I'm not entirely convinced.
We're not terrible people,
Lysagoras snapped, stepping forward to the edge of the podium.
We're people, that's all. Smart and foolish, brilliant and flawed people. And you're not people, not really. Your entire race would probably still be scrabbling in the mud, chasing herd animals with sticks, if we hadn't come to show this world a better way.
What's the better way? Locke asked. What's supposed to happen when that beam of energy hits Heaven's Spire? Lysagoras gave her his thoughtful nod.
You're a credit to your people, Locke. You did your research, not that it helped you.
Now? Jell asked, and her grip on Locke tightened.
Not yet, Lysagoras said. Locke seems very interested in the future of the Republic. I'd like her to see it. Kutasoshka Jairis,
Gil's power said, with a note of warning in his voice.
Why not?
Lysagoras said, smiling at the other paladins.
I see no reason for her not to know. In a few minutes, he went on, that beam of energy you're talking about will hit Heavenspire and scatter energy across most of the Republic.
Destroying it, Locke guessed.
Person loveth this,
Gil's power called out, sounding insulted.
Seeding it, Lysagoras said. In a few years, more crystal deposits will be found, a bounty of mining opportunities that will usher in a bold new age of prosperity for the Republic.
And the Empire, added Princess Veiled Lightning, or the Ancient wearing her.
More crystalline wonders, Archvoyant Savard said. More trade with the dwarves who come in to work the mines, and the elves who help manufacture fine crystal goods. More paladins. All for the small price of a little more illness among the livestock, Mr. Skinner said with satisfaction. Mostly the ones who were sickly already, the ones who can't afford herbs or healers.
He grinned.
Better for the herd in the long run to cull the weak, anyway.
So ordinary people will die, Locke said slowly, her gaze never leaving Lysagoras. That's what you're saying.
Ordinary people always die, Locke.
Lysagoras shrugged.
That's their job. If the tables were turned, you'd do the same to us.
Mr. Skinner was frowning.
Sir, he said.
But you're not us, Locke cut in. You're creatures living in the paladin bands, enslaving whoever wears them.
Sir,
Skinner said, and gestured at Jell, who put a hand over Locke's mouth.
What is it, Skinner?
Lysagoras asked in annoyance, and then paused as he heard the crowd murmuring. As Skinner gestured with Locke's walking stick, Lysagoras looked over to where he pointed. Lysagoras's face shone huge on the glamour screen still, and everyone in the crowd was staring at it. In the hidden central chamber, Icy Fist looked at Lysagoras and Mr. Skinner.
I believe they have seen us. Kale?
Kale glanced up from the console, where he was frantically attuning crystals.
Quick cut to Skinner. He's got that good gut punch look. Then back to Lysagoras. No way he shuts up now.
Icy nodded to the puppeteers, who looked sickly but grim as they worked the consoles. The puppets of the dragon, the manticore and the griffin lay discarded on the floor next to the crushed fragments of three paladin bands.
Down in the back room of the processing centre, Tern stepped back from a crystal array that put anything on Heaven's Spire to shame, took a deep breath, put her attunement charger down, and flexed her aching hand.
"Not bad," she said. "Not bad at all."
If Desidora had done her part up on Heaven's Spire, and Kale had gotten Icy's message and set the font to 1/3 diffusion, there was a pretty good chance that this wouldn't just result in a cataclysmic explosion.
Came a voice from behind her, and Tern looked to see Westyke backing through the doorway. "There's a problem outside, and I don't believe I'm equipped to deal with it."
"You have magical armor, asshole,"
Tern stomped over.
"What problem is beyond your ability to..."
Oh. Two hunter golems came through the processing center toward them.
"Their spears might be able to penetrate my armor," Westyke said. "So you can see how it would be wasteful to..."
"Oh, my gods."
Tern closed the door and then shoved a chair in front of it, like that was really going to help.
"What is your plan?" Westyke asked. "You've spent time with some of the greatest criminals in the Republic. You must have some..."
"I am one of the greatest criminals in the Republic."
Tern picked up her crossbow, cocked it, and drew a pouch full of the sparkling powder that could slow down or even take down a golem.
"And my plan is to die fighting and kiss my boyfriend up in heaven."
The Seguris looked down at Skinner with preternatural calm.
"Get over there and fix that, please."
"Sir."
Skinner tossed Locke's walking stick to the ground and hurried off in the direction of the font.
"Smile,"
Locke said. Jill's grip on her mouth had come loose. "You've been talking to the entire Republic." In the stands, the crowd was starting to get loud. People on the field were coming their way. They didn't look entirely certain, but they were asking questions.
"Do you really think that matters?"
Asagoras gave Locke a tired smile, then looked up over Locke's head and raised an arm. A flare of crimson light flashed out, and a moment later a dazzling white light exploded overhead with a force that made everyone on the podium stumble.
"As we are no longer talking to the entire Republic, Archvoyant Savert." "An illusion conjured by Locke's rogue wizard, Hessler," said Savert promptly.
"Coupled with mental domination of the crowd here," Princess Veiled Lightning added, "using Skinner's captured fairy creatures. Everyone here will attest that that conversation never happened."
"Very good."
Lesagoras nodded, then turned to Locke.
"Solved."
"They won't all believe," Locke said. Lesagoras laughed.
"I don't care what they believe. They won't be sure, not enough of them. And they won't know how much is true, and they won't know how many other people out there believe what they do. I don't need them to love us. I just need them to get up every day and do their jobs."
He raised an eyebrow at Locke.
"I hope this wasn't your master plan." "We're coming up on time," Savant said.
"Best in love with this,"
Gilspower added. "I'm giving you one last chance," Locke said. "Leave now. Go through your gate and close it on your side. Do that, and I swear we will leave you in peace." Lesagoras passed his lips.
"I appreciate the offer," he said
to the lone, unarmed woman being held down by a demon.
"What in the name of all the gods would make me accept it?"
"Conscience," Locke said. "Or failing that, fear. You've seen where this led you last time."
"Almost time," Savert said.
"Please," Locke said. "I don't want to do this. I beg you. Leave now in peace." Lesagoras blinked. Locke almost looked like she meant it.
"No," he said.
"Now?"
Jell asked.
"No, thank you," he said. "I want her to see it." "And now," Savant said.
Locke shut her eyes. The fountain of fire erupting from the font vanished as a great beam of blinding light blazed up from the ground to the sky. It struck the crystals in the underside of Heaven's Spire with a noise like every bell in the world ringing at once, and a blaze of colour like every rainbow exploding. There was a moment of stunned silence as the sound and light washed over the stadium, so bright and so loud that for just an instant everyone was simple black and white by comparison, only hearing their own breathing.
"What was that?"
Lesagoras demanded finally.
"That wasn't the crystal seeding beam."
"My team modified your plans," Locke said quietly. Lesagoras gave her his thoughtful nod.
"And?"
In the sky beneath Heaven's Spire, something growled. Everyone looked up, squinting to see what it was, but there was nothing visible to the naked eye. It was just an angry sound, a hateful sound that could not be as loud as it was. Then, from the crystals on the underside of the city, something grew. Something whose shape was impossible to measure with any degree of certainty, except that it was large and irregular, and either had tentacles or was tentacles. No matter what everyone disagreed upon when describing it later, however, they all agreed that it shone with a brilliant, glimmering rainbow of light, so that its body was only a shadow underneath.
"The glimmering folk," Lesagoris said, and took a step backward as the crowd began to scream again.
"They stopped you before," Locke said quietly. "They can do so again."
"You don't know," Lesagoris swallowed. "You don't know what you've done."
"I've taken the world from you," Locke said, and held her head up proudly.
"You stupid bitch," Naria yelled, and vaulted down from the podium.
She reached Locke before anyone could react. A dagger flashed into her hand, and then it was in Locke's chest.
"I had everything," Naria shouted, "and you ruined it, like you always do."
She pulled the dagger free, and blood fountained from the wound. Locke went limp in Jell's grasp. In the sky, the first of the glimmering folk began to float down toward the earth, while another pulled itself from the crystals of heaven's spire. The guards around the burned areas of the stands dropped their buckets and joined the panicked crowd surging for the exit again.
"Everyone," Lesagoras shouted, "listen to me carefully. We don't have much time. If we get back to our gates, we can be through safely before the glimmering folk reach us. Leave everything and get to the gate, and we...
He broke off and started laughing.
"Oh, damn, I almost got through it," he said, chuckling, as he turned to the other paladins.
They were laughing as well, their dry amusement crisp and clear against the incoherent screaming of the crowd in the stands all around them. Naria turned to them in confusion.
"What are..."
"Please, Locke, discontinue your sad little act," Lesagoras said,
glaring at the apparently dead Locke, who still hung in Jell's grasp with blood dripping from her shirt.
"The sudden turnabout, the rash violence that kills the person I would have taken revenge on, leaving me with no other recourse but to flee the impending disaster. I've seen this play, and I wouldn't have believed it, even if I hadn't had an informant in your midst."
Locke's eyes snapped open, and she straightened in Jell's grasp.
"You're lying," she snapped. "No one on my crew would turn against me."
Lesagoras gave her his thoughtful nod.
"You might be right,"
he cocked his head thoughtfully.
"But there are people not on your crew who heard your plan, aren't there?"
With a stricken look, Locke turned to Naria. Then,
"Oh, Issa," said Naria, smiling brightly from the throne in Lochinville Manor. "You have no idea how long I've waited to hear you say that."
Locke looked at the guards. "May we speak alone?" Naria raised an elegant eyebrow behind her lenses and then waved to her guards.
"My dear sister would hardly come here openly if she wished me harm. Please attend outside."
The guards nodded and left, and when they were alone in the throne room, Naria's smile disappeared.
"Now, the paladin bands you've seen carry the souls of the ancients, and they take over the bodies of anyone who puts them on. The paladins are just thralls, slaves to the ancients."
Locke waited for Naria to tell her that she was crazy.
"That's consistent with what I've seen," Naria said instead,
and when Locke shot her a look, Naria touched a delicate finger to her lenses.
"I don't know whether these are artifacts of the ancients or the glimmering folk, but I can see the energy riding the victim,"
she sniffed.
"It's unpleasant, but they are everywhere. Even Savert is affected."
"I have a way to get rid of them," Locke said, "but I need your airship. And if there's a way for you to get yourself into their good graces, I could use someone on the inside."
Naria laughed, the same sparkling, beautiful laugh she had given before. "Easily done, sister. They are waiting for me to deliver you to them in the reading room."
Locke tried for a smile, but it came out as a grimace.
"And you were going to do it?"
Naria shrugged.
"I hoped you would give me a better alternative. Besides, I'm not sending you in blind."
"All right." Locke set the anger aside with a shake of her head. "Here's what I need."